Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Cicely Tiernan. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. The Phoenix City Council nears a vote on the budget. From the Ahwatukee Foothills News by Paul Marianak, AFN Executive Editor. Phoenix City Council will be voting next Wednesday on a proposed $2.2 billion general fund budget for the 2025-26 fiscal year, but the May 21 vote likely won't be unanimous after its newest members said the police department gets too much money. In highly critical remarks during a meeting May 6, District 7 Councilwoman Anna Hernandez, who was sworn in last month, found no spoken support from her colleagues for her position on a spending plan that seeks to maintain existing services while closing a $36 million deficit for the fiscal year beginning July 1. "I'm in a no on this budget as it now stands," Hernandez said. "Our city is literally already under attack from Trump's federal administration cuts, and I don't believe that this budget pushes hard enough to respond to those attacks and to protect our people and our workers, our city workers, and our programs. I also do not feel that this budget positions us for future attacks from this administration, and it doesn't respond to the recession that is very likely on the horizon." Stating that she has a huge concern over past and proposed police spending that will near $1 billion in the coming fiscal year, Hernandez, whose district is mainly South Phoenix, said, "Our budget should be our moral document and should be our North Star of how we are investing into our people and what this message is like. What message are we sending to the public? We're saying that we are going to continue to underinvest in the root cause solutions that would reduce community hardships and protect our residents. And once again, we are increasing police funding and responding to the crisis that our communities are facing with more criminalization and more threats of police violence." She said more money should be spent instead on affordable housing and homeless prevention protection for reproductive health services, on rights for LGBTQ+ community immigrants and refugee support services, racial equity and anti-discrimination initiatives, climate resiliency and environmental justice, public education and youth partnership initiatives. City Budget Director Amber Williamson said a proposed $46 million increase in police department spending next fiscal year will largely go to salary increases and benefits, particularly pensions. Phoenix police are budgeted to receive almost $212.9 million in specialty revenue funds, which mainly cover pensions, for a total of $981.1 million in 2025-26. Besides keeping pace with current pension costs, the city also has a staggering $3.5 billion in unfunded pension liability it must pay over time. "Pensions also make up about $20 million of that amount," Williams said of the police budget. "We're contractually obligated. We need to meet our pension obligations. We also have increases for health insurance, as well as the council back in September did direct our city manager's office to increase certain items for the police department. This includes things like an early intervention system, a voice-active intelligence system, adding 4 additional positions and vehicles." Citing a $6 million increase for vehicle replacement, she added, "the cost of each unit for citywide vehicles, but particularly for police replacements of their patrol vehicles, has really significantly increased. So that is what makes up predominantly the increase is in the police department's budget." City manager Jeffrey Barton added, "Council has done, I think, a good job at trying to contain the growth in the police department budget to the extent they can. We have added about $11 million worth of new programs over the last couple of years in police, but the lion's share of that was done by virtue of trying to keep it within the existing footprint of the police department budget. Public safety comprises 62% of the operating budget and includes not only police, but also fire department and emergency medical services. Indeed, Barton noted, the fire department has been the recipient of far greater operational and capital dollars in recent years, as the city adds dozens of personnel and new fire stations to cut an overall emergency response time that had been well above the national average. The city says its average citywide response time will be cut in half from about 8 to 4 minutes for both fire and medical emergencies. The city aims to increase fire department staffing from 1,865 positions to 2,023 by dedicating $25 million for an additional 134 sworn and 19 civilian positions. Another $9 million will be spent to hire 56 sworn personnel in the fire department, half of which will go to a new fire station being built under the $500 million bond voters approved last November. Additionally, services for homeless people will cost an additional $4.5 million, raising total spending to $26 million. Councilman Tom Waring, the only other council member to address proposed police spending last week, said it's understandable that the department would need the money to cover rising personnel costs. He noted that the department is still 600 officers short of where City Council wants it to be, and said salaries and benefits for officers must remain competitive, as most other cities and towns are competing aggressively to boost the ranks for their police departments. "I think you've done an excellent job of managing our money," Waring told Barton and Williamson, stressing that over the last 6 years, Phoenix has added numerous social programs that never existed before. "When I started, quite a few programs that didn't exist we started," Waring said. "I always said we should focus on police, fire, parks, libraries, streets. Those are the things that people associate with." He also noted, "The number of police has gone down pretty dramatically, pretty quickly. We're having a hard time replacing them. We're spending a lot less on police actually out patrolling because we don't have as many people out there." The $2.2 billion general fund is part of a total $6.2 billion in spending for the coming fiscal year. While the general fund covers most daily operations of core services, including police, fire, parks, libraries, public works, and municipal court, the remaining two-thirds includes 35% enterprise funds that cover Sky Harbor International Airport spending, as well as water and sewer services. The remaining 33% comprises specialty funds from voter-approved initiatives for parks and preserves, transportation, additional public safety programs. While preserving existing services, Barton said the city has tightened spending in almost every department to achieve a balanced budget and erase a $36 million spending deficit. He said the city projects a $17 million surplus from the current budget that he is recommending be set aside for unexpected operating expenses in the coming fiscal year, and noted the city expects an $83 million deficit in 2026-27 and a $6 million budget hole in the fiscal year after that. Among the pressures on Phoenix's budget, which also are similar to those many valley towns and municipalities are contending with, are the legislature's elimination of the rent tax and its passage of a flat personal income tax. With passages of the flat income tax, Phoenix lost $84.7 million in state shared revenue this fiscal year and will lost another $22.7 million next fiscal year. The rent tax abolition took effect in January, so the city had 6 months of revenue from the levy before it disappeared. So while the levy's abolition will cost the city $37 million in the current fiscal year, the revenue loss will more than double to $90.7 million in 2025-26. To help balance the budget, the city increased the transaction privilege tax and use tax rate to 0.5% to 2.8% from 2.3% and reduce spending in some departments by $24 million. Other future headwinds also involve covering the annual operating costs of the projects that are under construction as a result of voter approval of a $500 million general obligation bond last November. Barton also said the city is keeping a close eye on sales tax revenue and the uncertainty over the future of federal grants that total millions of dollars. That uncertainty in Washington, D.C. is mirrored by uncertainty at the state capitol, as the legislature and Governor Katie Hobbs have yet to reach an agreement on Arizona's budget for the coming fiscal year. Barton identified a series of measures still in the wings at the legislature that, if approved by Hobbs, could cost the city another $50 million in revenue. Community members don't want less service, he told council last week. They typically want more services, and we want to be able to have the resources to meet those expectations. Significant economic uncertainty and volatility going on right now with the federal administration. He also said, risks continue with the legislature in terms of potential bills that could be signed by the governor, whether it's this session or it's future sessions that would continue to limit your local control, reduce revenues further, or increase our expenses. The city plans no increase in the property tax rate, although taxpayers likely will be paying more because of higher property values. That increases in property values as well as new construction is expected to generate about $200 million in new revenue for the city. Barton also noted that 12 town halls as well as phone calls and emails about the budget yielded a total 440 comments from 402 residents. He characterized the overall nature of those comments as supportive for the proposed budget, with most of the comments calling for the preservation of existing services, improving fire emergency response, providing legal assistance for people facing eviction, homelessness and heat relief spending, street and bike improvements, and support for the library and cultural activities. Red light flashers will catch Tempe speeders. From Tempe Tribune by Lee Chappelle, Tribune contributing editor. You see it every day. You're sitting at a red light, and as the signal changes, cross traffic whizzes through the intersection after their light turns red. It's a game of chance. When is it really safe to proceed through the intersection even though your light turned green, hoping not to be T-boned by a red light runner who might be speeding to try to make it through? Tempe city leaders had enough of it a year ago and unanimously voted to bring back photo enforcement at 14 intersections after a decade-long hiatus. Not only are red light runners flashed, but so are speeders. The first program went live on May 7. For the first 30 days, violators are receiving warnings. Starting June 5, they will receive misdemeanor traffic citations carrying a $250 fine for red light running or speeding through an intersection. If a red light is run while speeding, that is a second citation. Excessive speeding, defined as 20 miles per hour or more over the posted limit, becomes a criminal charge. There always has been grumbling about photo enforcement. It's done by machines, not human officers. It's only a moneymaker for the city, and on and on. The data shows that these cameras effectively reduce crashes and serious injuries worldwide, Tempe Mayor Corey Woods said. Tempe residents deserve to feel safe on our roads, whether they walk, drive, or bike to get where they need to go, and this program will help ensure that they can do so safely. The program is part of Tempe's Vision Zero, a data-driven traffic safety policy with the goal to reduce fatal and serious injury crashes to zero. The city hired two positions in Tempe Municipal Court, and the police department hired seven to process photo citations. Tempe estimates there will be no fiscal impact because costs will be offset by revenue from the program. I would respond to those residents who are having issues with it by saying we hope eventually that we do lose money, because honestly, we don't want people to get tickets, said Ellie Bollison, a senior civil engineer in Tempe's traffic engineering department. We want people to drive safely and respond to the signals so that everyone can go home safely at the end of the day. There is plenty of evidence that photo enforcement programs help bring your loved ones home alive. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has found that red light camera programs reduce fatal red light running crashes by 21% and overall fatal crashes at signalized intersections by 14%. Scottsdale has used photo enforcement for years and has seen a 65% reduction in speed-related crashes and a 23% overall drop in collisions at intersections with the cameras, according to a study by Lee Engineering. A recent University of Arizona analysis found that red light cameras at select Phoenix intersections reduce crashes resulting in deaths or injuries by 28%. Tempe crashes rising. Traffic accidents in Tempe in 2023 continued a four-year upward trend in people dying or suffering injuries, according to the Arizona Department of Transportation. There were 30 fatal crashes in Tempe in 2023, a notable increase from 20 the year before. Intersections with a particularly high number of crashes include Baseline and Rural Roads, Baseline and Mill Avenue, and Southern and Mill Avenues. Rural Road, with high traffic volume from one end of Tempe to the other, ranks high at nearly every major arterial cross street. ADOT's annual Crash Facts reports show that the 7,299 accidents that occurred in Tempe in 2023 surpassed the 6,585 in 2022, 5,844 in 2021, and 4,153 in 2020. Go back another year, and it was one of Tempe's bloodiest ever. There were 8,899 crashes in Tempe in 2019 that claimed 15 lives and injured 3,935 people. Tempe anticipates more than a 50% reduction in crashes with the photo enforcement cameras now live. In the past 10 years since it was terminated in Tempe, the research relating to photo enforcement points toward the fact that it is effective in reducing the number of serious and fatal collisions and just improving safety in general, Volleson said. Mike Hayes has seen more than his share of carnage at Tempe intersection crashes. Now a lieutenant in his 26th year, he oversees traffic for the Tempe Police Department. I have one job, and that's to make sure that people coming in and out of our town or that live here are safer, Hayes said, and I take that job extremely seriously. Those collisions at intersections or that are caused by extreme, high rates of speed are some of the most tragic events that I've seen in my entire career. Not only the carnage that occurs to people's bodies physically, or whether they pass away as a result of those collisions, but also the trauma for those families. And it's true for the officers that are investigating all those calls. It's such an unexpected occurrence that it is really difficult for everyone to get over. The photo enforcement program is administered by Mesa-based Vera Mobility. In addition to the 14 intersection cameras, there are 4 mobile units on Tempe streets at unannounced locations and rotated every 2 weeks, Hayes said. In 2023, Vera Mobility's programs captured 11.6 million speed citations and 4.6 million red light citations across the U.S. The speed cameras resulted in a 62% reduction in recidivism, while the red light cameras resulted in an 84% reduction, meaning most drivers did not receive a second citation. Hayes said the city worked closely with Scottsdale, Mesa, Paradise Valley, and Chandler, where similar programs exist, in formulating Tempe's program. Red means stop. So what are best practices when approaching a photo enforcement intersection as the light turns yellow? Some drivers might be inclined to gun it to get through. I think it's going to have to reverse effect, Hayes said. To be honest with you, I think people gun it now because there's no ramifications if they do cross through the red. Our hopes are that when people see yellows, they're actually slowing down and stopping because they will be accountable for those actions. Volleson said that from an engineering standpoint, the time in the yellow cycle is determined from mathematical equations for the purpose of ensuring that when we call the dilemma zone, where you can neither go through the intersection safely or stop safely, is eliminated. So I think people might be scared that they can't get through in time, or that they're going to have to slam on their brakes and hurt themselves or their vehicles in order to stop on time, Follison said. I just wanted to reassure everyone that that's not the case. Those yellow times are calculated with the dilemma zone in mind to eliminate it, so you can make a safe decision. Hayes said the fixed and mobile units will allow officers to work in other locations, addressing other problems. I'm really excited about the program, Hayes said. I'm almost more excited about the 4 mobile units. I really think it's going to bring us a new era of safety. I believe we're going to cut down serious physical injury and fatality and create a feeling of safety for everyone driving through town every day. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Cicely Tiernan. Now continuing on. Ahwatukee author's novel draws upon Apache history. From the Ahwatukee Foothills News by Jerry Capel, AFN contributor. Ahwatukee Foothills author Lynn Galvin has always been fascinated by the history of the Western United States. For her first novel, Legacy of the Blue Mountains, published by the University of Nevada Press, she drew upon her formal and informal education and personal experiences, which were all shaped by the West, and added a dollop of imagination. The book centers on a group of fictional present-day Apache children in Mexico. They live as their people always have, but after their last elder dies, they embark on a journey that sends them colliding with modern times in southern Arizona. Galvin noted that the book is seated in reality. Although Geronimo made his third and final surrender in 1886, a remnant group of Apaches went on raiding and living into the 1940s in Mexico's Sierra Madre Mountains, she explained. She pondered what would happen if others had retained their way of life and evaded contemporary society into the 21st century. If they were high enough up in the mountains, she said, why couldn't they maybe have survived into the present? Galvin will read from, sell, and sign copies of Legacy of the Blue Mountains at a launch party from 6 to 8 p.m. on May 16th at the Posh Revival Resale Boutique on East Chandler Boulevard at South 32nd Street in Ahwatukee. Galvin paints a vivid picture of Apache culture in her book, thanks to the prolific use of their language. There's a glossary at the back, and how she describes their customs, mannerisms, clothing, and more. For example, she stresses how completely quiet the children are when traveling on foot, and how they cover their tracks so they won't be discovered. Although she didn't have any Apaches consult with her on the book or read it before publication, Galvin said she was very careful of her depictions to avoid misrepresenting them. Galvin also weaves in layers of other history via the main character, Nick, a Mexican-American U.S. Marine who lost both legs in Afghanistan. Kate Cross of Phoenix, who took writing classes with Galvin at Phoenix College, said she's impressed with her passion for her subject matter and her intelligence and goodwill towards other writers. Cross, who also writes historical fiction, said it's challenging to be faithful to the facts while creating a new tale. She complimented the way Galvin threaded in the history without being pedantic. She's blending Apache terms, Apache history, and Arizona history into a compelling story, Cross stated. Anna Pina, who owns the Posh Revival, also said she enjoyed Galvin's storytelling from the first time they met in her shop. Pina's husband, Alex, has Apache and Mexican heritage, which sparked a long conversation. Pina said Galvin told Alex so many things that triggered memories of stories he was told as a child by his maternal grandparents. Galvin also gave him a hard-to-find book written by a man who fought alongside Geronimo. We probably talked for about an hour, and it was really fascinating, Pena said. I just found her telling of the story so intriguing. I said, I'm not a bookshop, but I'd love to host a book signing for you here. Pina said she'll serve refreshments and hors d'oeuvres, and she asked people to RSVP at theposhrevival@gmail.com. That's theposhrevival@gmail.com. So she has enough seats. Galvin brings a lifetime of experiences and scholarship to Legacy of the Blue Mountains. As a toddler, Galvin camped with her family at Cochise Stronghold in southeastern Arizona, and as a college student, she had a teacher who spun tales of Lewis and Clark's exploration, like you were there with them, she said. After graduating from the University of Wyoming and earning a law degree there, Galvin worked for the Navajo Nation for 3 years in the early 1970s and again in the early 1980s. My job was to represent any Navajo and in any kind of legal situation, she explained. Whether a tribal member needed a will drawn up or someone was accused of stealing sheep. During that time, Galvin recalled, I wanted to be able to communicate directly and I took several classes in Navajo. She had lessons from some of the Code Talkers, the revered group of World War II soldiers who used their language for secret military communications. The Navajo name she was given meant the small woman who speaks for others. Galvin and her late husband Raymond lived in Puerto Rico, Germany, and Spain, but ended up in Arizona in 1996. She taught classes in local history at Cochise College and in the public schools in Phoenix. During her education, Galvin organized field trips to various historic and cultural locations such as Fort Bowie. I'm always encouraging people to go down there, she said, calling Cochise County, which borders Mexico, a magical area of the state. Galvin is working on a sequel to Legacy of the Blue Mountains and trying to find a publisher for another historical fiction work about Navajo people and one about Carmela Harris, an Apache girl who was taken and raised by an American woman in the 1930s. I wanted to write forever, Galvin said, and I did write, but I was writing legal memos. I'm hoping that I'll be able to produce a few more books because I sure did think about them long enough. The Posh Revival, 314 East Chandler Boulevard, number 116, Ahwatukee, 6 to 8 p.m., May 16th. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Cicely Tiernan. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.